Blog Talk Radio.
Can I borrow a sand, brother?
Y'all out there, y'all don't know nothing about that, youngsters. Well, I've got the guys on the show ain't necessarily youngsters. They know a lot about that. But but especially you, Byron. I know you might have done extra work on that movie. You might have worked on that movie for all I know, bro. I know the audition. This case center friends, everybody. If you're on the what they call the blog talk, well, not what they call it. That's the platform we're on. I see people, you know, look at the statistics. I see you people out there downloading us and listening to it. We appreciate it. If anybody's listening, 0906. If you would be so kind as to put likes or do whatever correspondent interaction that you do with the page, let me know. Let us know. Other than, you know, look at the stats that you listen in or you agree, you don't agree, or you just give up, you know. But that's what it is today. Yeah, I love the Godfather. You can hear him yelling in the background. My brother had a cover band back in the day called James Brown Jr. He's of the generation, by probably around the same age you and Wayne, where y'all were getting down the Godfather's soul when he originally came out. If you were one of them dancing brothers like my brother was, he had to move down with the ankles and, you know, the way James would do this thing in the splits. His whole bit was that that particular run in James in the Godfather, the guy would come and put the tape over his, he would go down. My brother would do that back in the day. I think there's some footage that I have to restore at my grandmother's house. If I could find it, it'd be golden. But 2001, what's going on? If you read the description of the show I put up, I said we're discussing the voting rights and the debt ceiling, a few things in between the political perspective, from the entertainment perspective, black TV content, good and bad, and sports, politics, and vaccines, right? If you pay attention to what's going on with Kyrie Irving, rock scientist. No, I'm playing. So let me bring the brothers in because I want to talk about, and I think, Byron, I'm going to need your historical call of facts, because one thing that struck me about voting rights when I really heard, you guys know, because of my background, I'm aware of politics, in and out of politics and the workings, usually pay attention, but certain details and facts, particularly from history, from certainly the 60s, the original Voting Rights Act, I don't know as much or have studied. So when I heard was kind of temporary or something that needed to be ratified like 50 years time in that time. I'm thinking, what, were they going to change their mind? And lo and behold, right, they changed their mind, right? It was just, you know, if you're going to get people to write a vote, then they had the right to vote. Boom, all done with in perpetuity forever, right? Why do we need to re-examine this issue? Should we change our mind, or should we find ourselves in a situation where we might not be the dominant culture anymore? We want motherfuckers not, excuse me, Ma, want people not to be able to vote anymore. Just a nice little bookend if you look at it a little bit. You know, it's just these, you know what, there's some diabolical, you know what. And you got to always keep an eye on these people because they ain't never going to stop trying to take your freedom for whatever reason. I have my own theories about that, but I'll keep them to myself. Lest I be accused of just being too extreme, you know, militant, bliggity black. But bring the fellas in. Yeah, as y'all can tell, I'm on one a little bit tonight. I'm looking at things with a sense of humor. Perhaps the new legalities that have come to fruition in New Jersey, but that's another story. Let's bring in the legendary historian, Brother Byron Saunders. It's, here you go. You're loaded up. What's up, B? How you doing tonight?
Good evening, my brother. nice to hear you feeling well, back on, we're up. You know, and yeah. I'm glad the topic is what it is because it's always the topic of what it is. But, you know, since you've declared me the legendary historian, I got to share two birthdays with you today that are indeed legendary. One, of course, Tuesday, October the 6th, 1767. Now, I know you weren't around back then, but the name of Henri Christophe. Does that name ring a bell to you, my brother? All right, time's up. You're not on Jeopardy, but that's okay. But I'm not surprised because Henri Christophe and Jean Zeppelin and Toussaint Louverture were the revolutionaries who overthrew the French.
So they were Henri Christophe. I knew of Toussaint Louverture.
Yes, yes. See, and so it's good to know these names because they are referenced as heroes who threw caution into the wind of all of the slave traders. You see, this is important information, history, because when we speak about voting rights, the other birthday is today. Born. Now, this is where it gets 150 years later. Saturday, October the 6th, 1917. Now, we've heard a lot about 1917 recently, the flu pandemic and all of that. Well, this is the birthday today of Fannie Lou Hamer. Okay, sick and tired of being sick and tired. Voting rights activist. See, it's so no accident that we're talking about all this and the John Lewis voting rights bill. And yes, the Republicans. And I ask the bigger question about history because, Eric, why did Reconstruction fail?
I don't know.
Thank you. Yes, you do. Voting rights. Voting rights being given to black people, freedom. And Reconstruction failed because white folks said we were giving them too much freedom. The South had to swear an oath to get back into the Union. And ever since then, every white person from a southern state, whether Dixiecrat or Republican, every segregationist, every racist has been engaged in the Mississippi, Alabama voting rights involvement of trying to deconstruct the federal government's authority because the federal government gave what? Voting rights and freedom to black people. And now the bigger question is, in this 2021, it's not just about the vote, it's about who has the power. White men are losing their power. Yeah, I hate to put it in the terms of race. No, I don't. I've got to put it in the terms of race. I'm a civil rights activist, above all the other things that I do, and a historian. And I've been tracking this for quite some time. And the truth of the matter is, and I heard it on Joy Reid tonight, and I keep hearing it from our very illuminated talking heads on MSNBC and CNN. And when they come up, they're telling you point blank that the Voting Rights Act and the Civil War and all this crap that we're going through right now with the insurrection, it wasn't about They were against democracy. They were against black people getting votes.
Mm-hmm.
The right to vote. See, they're connected,
right,
Eric. And we have to stop disconnecting what is obviously in front of our face to connect every dot across every T, dot every I, because it is pointing back to one problem in this country, actually two. One is the capitalist system, and for those of you arguing socialism, communism, and whatever-ism, capitalism must have what in order to survive and sustain itself? Cheap and free labor.
Right.
See, it's all connected.
Absolutely.
And so, yes,
the
Voting
the
Rights Bill.
The original Voting Rights Bill there was a clause in there where they said they would have to re-ratify it in 50 years, right? And so it makes so much sense that this was the plan. Maybe, they left themselves out, just like they did with the Electoral College from the Civil War era. But before we get too deep into that, really quickly, I'll bring Wayne into and get his assessment. But you didn't answer the real historical question of whether or not were you in Black Caesar. That is the real question.
Was I in Black Caesar? No, I wasn't in Black Caesar.
That's the real question.
No, but I was there. I saw it. I know what you're talking about. You're coming
from. That's the real historical question, because I know you was out the pavement around that time. You know what I'm saying? But let's bring Wayne in, the legendary newsman.
Oh, that's good.
Let's
start
waiting for it to look up here. Take a little time. There you go, Wayne. Wayne Gilman.
Hey, greetings, gentlemen. I don't even want to put my foot in that mess right there. I'm going to act like I'm, in my.
Well, you might have been working on a movie too.
Yeah.
You might have been doing voiceover.
I tell you, on a real tip, Eric, I heard you at the top of the show, and I just got struck with lightning. I was watching Joy Reid. Byron just mentioned her show a moment ago. I try to, keep up with everything that's going on. I have to admit that I've been distracted by quite a bit. But the problem, what got to me, is that a company that I've given a lot of money in and that I would like to cash in my retirement, as I advance in my retirement years, AT&T.
I'm
going to
sell my stock.
I had no idea. I am so freaking livid. And I realize, and again, it goes back to what you're saying about racism. There is a nexus in just about everything this country puts us as Black Americans through. It transcends the voting rights, Haitian immigration. Carlos Watson trying to start a media empire of his own. Not that we certainly need more Black press, but they know how to put the kibosh on us when they have to. The whole thing with the Bruce family in California, where their property was taken away almost 100 years ago, and the current governor was able to come in and sign some legislation giving it back to the family, and still, the children, the progeny of this couple that started this resort for Black people in California, they're doubtful to build on it, even though it's worth a small fortune, but it's just that racism, man. And I tell you, it bothers me, because I, always try to look at the glass as being half full. I want to believe that the American experiment at some point is going to give us a fair shake. And we're only 13% of the population, There are other people who are now coming into the country, people of color, who basically are going through, not going through exactly what we've been through, but it's like, it's the same game. When does it end? And it's not working for the white folks. People who are informed realize it's not working for them.
Before you get too far down there, you talked about a couple of things. You brought up some really good points. You mentioned the situation with the Bruce family and the beach out in California. Hermosa Beach or whatever part of the beach, but I used to live out there, and I heard about that, that someone told me that that was black land, like there was a black community, and they got driven off. And I didn't know that I heard there was really a whole community other than just those persons, those people, their land, obviously, the land they had and the way they blew up and made, obviously, they made a whole community that was built around them. But that's what I had heard, that that property was a long time ago, back in those days, was there was, you know, I mean, it's beachfront property. You go there now, it's no black people. And certainly when I lived a couple of blocks from there, when I took over my aunt's apartment out in Redondo Beach, you know, I would walk to the beach, but it was no, it was like no black community there, which I often, which, you know, it's California. So I'm wondering, like, well, no black people live near the beach, you know, even now near the hood section of the beach, I guess in Venice Beach, but not even in Venice. You know, it's not even just so that story is very real. And I heard the guy say, too, that he, you know, would still feel the racism. But shoot, man, I start charging people. Hey, the governor gave it back to us. Here's what's going to go down. Somebody, y'all going to start paying some money. I don't give up. You know what? You know? And I mean, just
well, they deserve reparations, man. I agree with you. I mean,
well, that's
what
that
is,
getting that
man
back. You know, also reminded me of Henrietta Lacks recently, a story that has recently been in the news about her people getting some sort of a restitution for the billions of dollars that she generated for the same system, right? It's the same. It's all the same system. If we talk about AT&T really quickly, you know, I found that out. I mean, we all watch Joy Reid Tonight. You know, I'm sure every black person does, as well as the other good shows that you can get really good information. While we're talking about, I don't want to forget about BNC, Black News Channel. Charles Blow is one of my favorites, as well as Mark Lamont Hill. But just that we have a 24-hour news channel now is very important. You know, those issues that you brought up, I mean, it's some real stuff. I got off my point. I lost my second point that you were talking about that I wanted to make. But they have just twisted the history around, you know. AT&T. I'm sorry. Yeah. When I heard that out, too, I was like, I'm selling my AT&T stock because I've just bought some AT&T stock and saw it had a good dividend payment, trying to, you know, get my numbers of shares up, and I was kind of happy as the only one that was kind of maintaining its value now, you know. But from a business aspect, you know, you understand how racism was good business in America, right? You know, keeping white supremacy going was good business, right? Obviously. And that's what they tapped into. I mean, it's diabolically genius for if you're just thinking about making money, right? That's what I guess now that's what they're talking about, and that's what Brother Crump was talking about now, making all these companies that claim they want to be socially responsible step up to the plate. And he was talking about some of these bios.
Well, it's the same thing like with Facebook now. Let's be honest. The minute Zuckerberg put Facebook as an IP on the stock market, everybody in the world, except for maybe the stupid, would think that, oh, he's just doing this just to get the notoriety. No, it was about doing what? Making money.
Money.
So don't be
surprised
that their bottom line effort is to make money.
Of course.
I'm insulted by the fact that you got people up on the talking head saying, well, you know, they've been doing all this and persuading me. And you know what? Stop the crap. Stop the bull. Yeah.
Well,
you know they
remember.
Were there to make money. You gave them the opportunity to be on the stock exchange, and at the end of the day, it is about what? You don't join the stock exchange to be the biggest charity in the world. You're there for one purpose and one purpose only.
Well, it's even before that.
Amen.
It's even before that, because you remember when the early days of Facebook, it was the whole thing he was trying to figure out before they were able to go on the stock exchange and be posted on the market. They're trying to figure out value. What value? So that was the days when the people were. Some people were. Why are you collecting everybody's information and having them enter in all this stuff? And what are you going to do with it? And clearly, it was they claimed they would never have advertising. I think in the early days of Facebook, chats and all that, they wouldn't do any real advertising. Now that's
the advertising is one of their main sources of revenue, and using the whole kind of clickbait content that this woman, the whistle doing the whistle blowing about.
Right. Now, I got a major question about that. Who shut Facebook down? Was it Facebook or was it some foreign hack?
Come on, guys.
We're in the business. Eric, you and I are in the business of making Hollywood stories real. Come on.
They shut it down.
The reason why they shut it down. I won't buy that, and I don't care what you're selling.
Now, listen,
They shut it down
themselves, or somebody else shut it down to show how much power they got and how many people need that.
Mm-hmm,
I wouldn't be surprised
mm-hmm,
if they went
mm-hmm.
off, if they went offline themselves, right, to do whatever they were to do, and also to, you know, exhibit how many people. Yeah, I didn't even know it was off because I was busy that day. I was in a meeting for those couple hours,
yeah.
So I didn't even know it was off. But the people who, like, you know, the people who get their news and five on it, you know, we all check it. I check it if I'm not doing nothing else, and it would have been off. But, you know, but people have so much of their life invested in it, so many of their pictures,
yeah.
And people use it for business. You know, that's the way I first was attracted to it,
yeah.
As an entertainer.
Yeah.
Use it as a business page, you know, put your Facebook page up as business. So now people have all of that stuff on there. It's a part of their, some people, like I said, a part of their livelihood. That's how they make their money. You know, you can accept payments off Facebook. You know, so it's too big of an industry to stop, in my opinion.
Well, I hate to think that happened. You know, I know you all are breaking news here tonight with this information, but, you know, I still believe in Santa Claus. They said there was some technical issues, and I was never really a big fan of Facebook when it first started. In fact, the only reason why I'm dealing with social media now is because I realize – if you can't beat them, you have to join
the media.
Them. Yeah, you know, it's and the thing, and I still maintain I'm from the era of the fairness doctrine, and that was being petered out towards the end of my, long-standing career back in the day. But if ever there
for people that might not know what the fairness doctrine is, why don't you say that out loud for listeners that might not be aware?
All right. Well, I'm going to give you, basically a thumbnail sketch. I can't, you know, recite the whole thing based on, you know, what's been published 50, 60 years ago. But there was regulation of all the media. The Federal Communications Commission was formed way back in the early 40s, late 30s. I'm just guesstimating. It's in that period there.
1949.
All right. So I wasn't too far off base. And, as these media houses were being built and growing, the government felt that to a certain extent there was a need for regulation. It wanted to make sure that information that was being put out was factual, that enough people heard what was considered factual, and even if there was misinformation, there was, you know, in this thumbnail sketch, there was an option to bring somebody on with an opposing point of view, and I'm going from a broadcast perspective, to basically air your grievances or whatever it is that you challenge, and you know, it was left for the public to decide, you know, what's right from what's wrong. It's not like how it is today where media houses that are not regulated by the FCC are allowed to promote a certain agenda and they get away with it. And worse yet, it's at a time when a pandemic is occurring and people are dying and it's destroying this country. But the deal is that they have a right, like everyone else, to question what it is, even what I'm saying. And even if they were to witness, that's to tell you the stupidity of it all, you know, people are witnessing where people are dying, that they are voicing their regret, not taking into consideration the research. You know,
right.
You mentioned Kyrie Irving a moment ago.
I'm
in disbelief. He's somebody that I admired.
Well, let me pause you real quick. Wayne, if I can pause you real quick. just the fairness doctrine. More people are more familiar with it in terms of two candidates running for office, right? That's really what it kind of relates to as well. One network has one candidate on. Fairness, in all fairness, or fairness doctrine kind of relates to you got to have the other candidate on opposing opinion, right? That's kind of what it is also in a nutshell, too. I just wanted people are probably more commonly aware of it in that usage terms than the terms you're talking about in terms of public square type of information. But go ahead about you.
But the opportunity was always given. It was made a point. If you couldn't run it, if you could, you couldn't even air a story without running a disclaimer saying, well, we reached out to so-and-so and to get their point of view, because that has to be documented, you know? And people who are familiar with the tradition of what started years ago and were reared under that understanding have that expectation. But there's a whole generation out here who are not familiar with it.
Well, that's not really it wasn't common knowledge. To me, it was more common knowledge that when you have from a political standpoint, it wasn't really common knowledge in terms of fairness doctrine. I mean, I'm realizing that's why people have letters to the editor or maybe they have guest op-eds or whatever to give opposing viewpoints, particularly in areas that aren't necessarily fact-based, I would suppose, right?
The history of the fairness doctrine should be noted, fellas, that the FCC actually eliminated the policy in 1987 and removed the rule that implemented the policy from the Federal Register in August of 2011. So note the erosion of the regulatory agency that was engaged in 1949 to regulate fairness of as it's been, a policy requiring television and radio broadcasters to present contrasting viewpoints on controversial issues of public importance. That's it.
Well, I know, the beloved Ronald Reagan had a hand in weakening the existence of the doctrine. And, you know, you mentioned 87. You know, I want to think it was even before. There's always been a fight against it, but, you know, right now, I mean, it exists, but in a very watered-down version. And, you know, people look at it and think it's, you know, well, why do we have to adhere to that, you know?
And also, remember this, the breakup of the mega media moguls, because remember we had the breakup of Bell, the Bell system broke up because of monopoly. We had the breakup of they stepped in and started to break up the monopolies of these television owners, but then as they started to deregulate, then you had people like Murdoch and Sinclair and a former mayor of New York, can't think of Bloomberg, buying up cable markets in the Midwest and then dictating to the FCC what they wanted the doctrine to relate to. So, I mean, it's been a concerted effort. Just like I said, why did Reconstruction fail? It was a good idea. But you have people who are always trying to undermine the regulation. How do I cheat it? How can I get a free pass? That's what's been going on. And the capitalist system is engaging that to even be more of that, to deregulate the government's oversight of its identity and his brand so that they can do whatever they want to do. Like, we got this oil spill in the West Coast, and they don't want to take blame for it because they were given the information a month before to let them know that you guys' oil is leaking into the ocean here.
Hey.
Hey, man. We shouldn't be having any oil spills at all in history, period. I mean, but we should be off fossil fuel by now. We all know, you know, big corporations.
Hello.
That's how they work. Let's move on to the subject you were getting ready to get to, Wayne. We hopped off a little bit, and I'm talking about sports, politics, and vaccine. You were talking about boy Kyrie. You want to finish your thought there in terms of?
I'm extremely disappointed. I mean, there is enough factual information. You know, I mean, we're not dealing with what happened with the Tuskegee experiment and all that. Mm-hmm. Here's a guy who grew up part of his life outside the continental United States, if memory serves. But it's almost like as if, you know, by him being reluctant to submit to taking his vaccine, it's like destroying any opportunity. I mean, there's money associated with his involvement in the sport. There are people here that know that he is a very important factor with regard to the Brooklyn Nets being a successful organization, or else they would not have traded for him, you know? And there are people in the hierarchy there that need to sit down, but he always seems to, you know, he has a propensity to go the other way on a lot of issues, and sometimes I could respect him for some of the things that he, you know, has, you know, basically stood up and said, well, I ain't playing today because George Floyd died or Kobe Bryant, you know, or, you know, I understand some of these things. But, you know, you have colleagues in this business. I have to give, you know, much to LeBron James, you know, with regard to coming out and saying that he's, you know, covered his family, let alone himself. And Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who to me is like, you know, he's the mentor. If anyone that Kyrie could identify with, it would be him. But
yeah, Kareem's the original.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm in disbelief. I don't know if this is a game, you know, because it's certainly turning out to be a game. You know, I mean, it's an unpleasant one because it's always us. You know, it's our folks. And, you know,
I don't put it like that, man. It's always us, our folks. We always the ones committing crimes. Don't put it like that. It's an individual's choice. And Kyrie, I don't know how much of him growing up outside the continental United U.S., but I believe was over here in school in Jersey a little bit, at least, maybe his older years, as far as I know.
Yeah, I think he was a teenager when he got here.
Right. I mean, you know, I know his family a little bit through my family, so, you know, those were some things. But, the whole thing in terms of the vaccine, you know, that's an individual choice. I mean, you know, obviously a cat like him, you know, if he doesn't want to, that's your thing, but you got to wait. There's a lot of stuff you got to pay. I mean, you know, you got to figure your.
And I'm sorry, you play that game, man. You're considered like an example for other people out there, young people who follow that. Well, Kyrie ain't getting it, you know, and blah 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 blah. And next thing you know, they're, you know, without any kind of justification. You know, I mean, it's just unfortunate that that's the case, and I hope he thinks this one out. You know,
I mean, you know, or not play if that's the choice. I mean, I think that seems like it would be the end result. He is not interested in changing his stance. I've heard I heard about him doing like some other things that were out, seem not the sharp one. I heard he thought the world was flat for a minute. You know, it's okay. Have you paid attention in school ever? Come on, man. But, you know, this is the kind of thing that, you know, that's some of those are circulating a lot on the internet, right? And in the early days before all of the social media, I used to be on, you know, YouTube all the time. And YouTube was the original king of putting a lot of stuff out. That was the first time I heard about Alex Jones, InfoWars, and watching his little escapades before it became apparent that he was like straight racist, crazy racist dude, you know. But so you can understand why people don't have an educational basis outside of what the internet has offered them. Unfortunately, I think that's the drawback of these younger generations now, that in this thing that's in their hand makes information so accessible so easily, but also it also causes a lack of verification. You know, there's no other, you know, the wrong information can get out there and get out there so pervasively that you almost don't have another source to go to verify it, you know? I mean, it requires some serious cross-checking, you know, like growing up. How many times have you told when parents told you to read the newspaper, but you have to read a couple of newspapers to get kind of a sense of, you know, I mean, my dad always tried to make us read the Star Ledger and maybe the New York Times, you know, just to know what's going on in the world. So, and even right. that is from,
well,
like, a
and the thing is, and again, I'm not trying to, you know, make it sound like as if it's more than what it is, but, you know, your parents, they were educated. They were both college grads. They came from a, they were
point.
Part
that's
of a political.
My point is that they were educated to where people have, our generation is able to, you know, not just rely on what we're seeing on the fucking internet, where people can just make up stuff, you know?
Right.
You know what I mean? I think we're a little bit more savvy in terms of not believing just any old bullshit. Because now all three of us do that.
Well, that's what I'd like to think. But, you know, it just troubles me that... you know, we're still dealing, and I understand if you're persuaded by, you know, maybe what your friends and others would say to hold truth. But I'll use myself as my own example, man. I mean, I don't have any shame. I'm not embarrassed by talking about what I went through 4 years ago or 3 years ago when I had gone into the doctor's office on a regular basis, and he's telling me, I was always curious about, you know, prostate cancer and the impact of it, and not realizing that there was a rich history in my own family because no one ever talked about how certain people passed, and worse yet, you know, they were 4,000 miles away. And I'll never forget how this one doctor told me, well, you don't have to worry about that. Men don't die from that anymore. What are you taking the test for? You know, it's like, you're wasting your money with that. And it wasn't until I was beyond the threshold and I really had a reason to have an operation that I put the time into getting as much information
in terms
about
of learning
it.
On your own information. I would try to see where you're going with that. Talk about in terms of learning about stuff yourself and get information and research, correct?
And to me that was the most important thing. So I equate that with what's going on with this pandemic
right.
we're going through, you know, and people need to do the research if they're not, well-versed on some things, and that's it, because, you know, you can hear stuff that from people, and I'm ashamed to say, you know, a lot of it is just a lot of misinformation, and just because you have a shingle outside your office doesn't necessarily mean that what you're telling me, as I found out the hard way, is correct.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Even doctors, right? I mean, that's what everybody's realizing now. Even doctors have an agenda or can be wrong or...
Yeah.
What does that mean? And we're talking about that type of information. We're not even talking about just stuff that we would assume... Yeah, we're talking about stuff you would assume to be general knowledge of people, you know, like just the stuff that the president can do and just like, you know, having lead tips, some stuff like the president would do, you know, or wouldn't do, you know, in the way that Trump was acting and saying certain things and misleading his followers. It's like, yo, don't you guys know that that's not what presidents do? You know, it's like a basic sense of the government and how it works, that there's a whole lacking of that. Any lacking of any understanding of three branches of government and this, he's not the king. And, you know, I think that really was the kind of pathway to all of these racist, ignorant motherfuckers really believing that whatever this guy said is supposed to be, you know, having no kind of objective perspective or objective knowledge on their own. I mean, you would figure everybody that goes to school
and
in America would know
the street. But think of this, because when you're trying to understand the mentality of someone who's already mentally broken, and I'm going to say this with all due respect, right now what we're seeing in our country is two things that we have actually allowed to happen, and one is probably connected to the other, I'm sure, but the other one is disrespect for the rule of law. And it's not just from the bottom, because we got the bottom criminals, But when you openly see at the top of the echelon criminals inside the FBI not reporting these women who testified about abuse from a coach, an Olympic coach, and then not believing them. And then you're responsible for bringing the justice, and you're sitting on the justice. You're sitting on the truth. So why are we so surprised when we got people who don't want to answer subpoenas, or we got people who say it's executive privilege? Two things, and I'm going to say this. White men, white people, y'all have stopped believing people of color and think that you all are gods. You don't make mistakes. Why is it so crazy we got a person who's been impeached twice, has not been convicted of his sexual peccadilloes, out here walking around in the streets free? You see, you cannot separate the visual of that and then go down the road trying to figure out why these young ladies who claimed abuse couldn't get justice until years later or even to be heard. You see, this is a pandemic. And then the other thing, and I said this before, and I realize it more or less, white people have not fought against another Caucasian European nation for 76 years. That was 1945 when World War II ended. 76 years, we have been engaged with confrontations of people of color. Now, you want to know why you got rogue policemen? Because when you send them off to as mean, green killing machines, who were they killing in the last 76 years?
Us.
People of color. Come on now. It is not cancer research, y'all. So when they come back to run and make a living being a police officer to serve and protect, they're not going to protect us. Because in the last 76 years, every one of our officers have been trained who come back to work police force, except for black people mostly, because we couldn't get the jobs in the police department. Now we're finally getting jobs in the police department, but hey, FBI raided who the other day? Come on, the union boss in New York City? Long overdue.
Amazing.
Come on, so you see, it's the pandemic of disrespect of rule of law, and then you've got these people running around figuring why it's so easy to kill a black person. Well, I can tell you it's been embedded and ingrained, and we watch it on TV, every cop movie, every war movie, every Indian cowboy movie. You tell me when you're going to realize and wake up one morning and say, oh, they must be aiming at me. Hello.
Right. Yeah. And Byron, as you mentioned, and I'm just going to segue briefly. I don't know if you guys followed the Carlos Watson controversy and what the New York Times did.
I read that article online today about the company going down, Wayne. Do you know any further?
The thing is that he remains committed to keep it going. But the thing that really bothered me, I woke up to an interview that he did.
Hey guys, there's a lot of feedback to other sounds, so if you could be cognizant of that, that would be good. Go ahead, Wayne.
I'm in an isolated room right now, so I don't know what's going on
with that.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, but just briefly, he was on MSNBC where he used to work. Mm-hmm. He was also on CNBC. And that same morning, and basically pleaded his case, admitted that he made some mistakes. But the thing is, it's just the way they ganged up on him and made him feel like as if, to me, it was a lynching. And what bothered me even more is that they took a person of color, Craig Melvin, and I don't know, I'm not sure Stephanie Ruhle's nationality. I think she might be Jewish. Forgive me if this is misinformation. But they both cornered him like as if he was a roach in a corner about questions that clearly, you know, they were asked over and over again, and he came back with the same result. And then when he left the studio, they sort of like, subtly ridiculed him for even starting a platform of wanting to start a business on his own. And that really bothered me. I mean, and there's a piece in Yahoo News tonight. I forgot the author, but she said, you know, because as I felt when I saw it, his demise is what's destroying black media. And, well,
that was that article. You know, that was what the article said, right? I read that article.
Yeah. You know, and so therefore, you know, I mean, it we have a long way to go, and we really, really need to at least try to see if we can, you know, hold it together, embrace each other. We may have differences and stuff like that, but it just seems like we have a common enemy. I mean, if somebody has given me money towards a company, whether they consider themselves a friend or a foe, as far as I'm concerned, that's an investment, you know? And this whole controversy with Sharon Osbourne and the use of the name, you know, I pay a mortgage to Loan Depot, and Loan Depot in the distance could sound like Home Depot, you know?
Oh, that was,
I mean,
part
they come up with all sorts of crap that just seems so freaking irrelevant just to bring somebody down. And
from what the article was saying is that they didn't have the money they claimed they had, right?
Well,
I didn't say anything about Sharon Osbourne.
I'm trying to remember. I thought it was an issue of his signage for an event that turned out to be successful, but I understood that she had invested a modicum amount of money in the operation, but there was some controversy with respect to whether there was some friendship there or whatever. Like he concocted the relationship between them on their own. And it wasn't that, you know, I agree with him. If somebody's willing to give me a couple of dollars, whether I know them or not, you know, then you're an investor, you know.
Right. Only thing
I didn't.
The article, you talked about something about Sharon Osbourne, right? The article I read didn't even mention that. It just mentioned that his partner didn't have the money he claimed to have, and he was impersonating someone else on a phone call to try and get the deal, did something shady like that. And so
he had to have somebody. I mean, every morning I woke up to Aussie News. He had advertising in strategic places where people all over the country, whether you're black, white, green, pink, whatever, you know, he had a presence.
The article was just saying they didn't have the money they claim they have. I'd been seeing him on TV with the same commercials you've been seeing. So, and I haven't seen him as,
you know.
I mean, the article I read this morning or yesterday made me think, right, I haven't seen any commercials for a minute. So I just figured all this shit just went down.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the New York Times did a kibosh on him, and, you know, that the gray lady has that kind of impact even in this day and age. But he's going to restructure. He said he made some mistakes, and I give him credit for coming out and saying that, you know. And I would be knee-deep in the weeds if I tried to explain what it is that he did wrong, but I give him, you know, courage and gold star for maintaining the veracity of what it is he was trying to project and what he was trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this business, you know, this is a very freaking unforgiving business. People don't care. You know, they'll chew you up, spit you out next, you know, and it just bothered me. And I'm glad somebody at Yahoo News felt what I felt and just took the time to put it in the paper.
Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, anything to do with on-camera anything is is very competitive. News, media, entertainment, all of it. It's all, you know, trying to edge out a space or some sort of notoriety or some sort of brand. You know, I'm watching.
Yeah.
I was thinking that about the kind of semi-segue here, but thinking that about early this morning, watching CBS This Morning News, and I noticed that they had Nate Burleson join the news hour, you know.
Right.
Morning.
Yeah.
Like, why what's up with
that.
You know, I'm like, what's up with him and Strahan, these guys? Why would I listen to those guys talking about news? You know, they're sports gods. Why all of a sudden? Mm-hmm. But then I rethought it. I was like, well, you know, that doesn't, just because they're professional athletes doesn't preclude them from being intelligent guys who have opinions on other subjects. I've seen that more with Nate than I did with Strahan. I just figured Strahan was trying to just stay popular, and, you know, that whole thing of the withdrawals from being a professional athlete and then not being in the spotlight anymore and trying to maintain some sort of spotlight, you know. I figured that was Strahan's vibe, but he's not bad on this show. But Nate, I really believe that he seems to be a guy that, you know, you could easily see him doing the news as well as sports, which is what he came from. But you could see him transitioning to other things. And I shouldn't, I guess I'm being hard on Strahan a little bit. You know, obviously he could do it as well. His seems a little bit more business calculated. I'm sure Nate's is as well too. But my point is that these cats are building their brand, you know, and that's what society has. Our society has become that now with the internet and the media. Like my little cousin was doing a little Facebook Live. He was just talking, you know, when he was talking to his friends there. And my sister was he was on for a minute too, you know, and I sent him something, you know, on a little text you could do. And my sister came in and she's like, how are you talking to him now? I'm like, no, he's live. Come on. And it's like, but everybody can broadcast. Everybody is their own broadcaster. Everybody can have their own little TV show. You got a Facebook page. You got your own little source for commentary. Your own little Byron Hour, Eric Hour, Wayne Hour, whoever the fuck, everybody Hour. You know, some people, you know, and everybody can have it on every single platform. So now you got this TikTok thing happening, right? And all you got is girls on there, people on there dancing, or girls on there looking in the mirror like they're posing to be supermodels and all this other stuff, or people working out or doing whatever. And people are finding their way that they can use that as a way to generate income, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's really remarkable, you know. Some people are doing recipes.
It is, you know,
some people are doing spiritual readings.
And to a certain extent, you're fireproof. You know, it's like only you could blow yourself up or whatever.
Right. So which leads me to the final thing in black content TV, good and bad. You know, there's a couple of shows on now that are good, and some are really just off the mark. One in particular, I'm not going to say the name of it because I got friends who work on the show, but I'm like, oh, they've never been to that place. They need to go to that place that they're trying to make the TV show about. But it's just, you know, there's so much black content. Y'all know there's black people on TV all over the place now, y'all. Remember, it wasn't like that back in the day for us. We called people down in the same room when one of us came on TV now, you know. And is it good and bad?
Exactly.
Some of them reality shows really got us looking bad, and the only thing about that is some of the ones looking as bad as some of the black people. So it's the equalizer showing, in my eyes, that the ignorance knows no bounds and is a human trait. You know.
Well, so. I have to say, gentlemen, Thursday and Friday, I was in Atlantic City. Last Friday, I saw 80-year-old Smokey Robinson still do his thing. Oh my!
Oh.
Now you remember the five heartbeats. You remember that scene where they're singing at the stage and the women in the front row are just fainting.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly what Smokey was doing to these 60 and 70-year-old women sitting in front of the stage.
Hey.
Yes.
Yes,
no.
He can
so there's
still
hope for me.
Do it.
Smokey still got it, huh?
He got it, yo. I'm saying, come on.
Wow.
He got his thing still going.
Yeah.
You know he still got it.
I loved it. I loved it. And it was just
I had no idea. I hope that show comes to New York. Right now, I'm anxious.
It's coming. Yeah, he's coming. And he's got a new song out with
hard to believe. I know, Eric, maybe this may not apply in your case, but, you know, Smokey Robinson, Ronald Isley is another one who's an octogenarian.
Ooh, yeah,
and Tina Turner, I mean, you know, I had a chance to interview some of these people, and, you know, just hard to believe that they're that age, but I guess 100 is the new 40. That's the way I'm looking at it.
When you say, listen, you know, when you're like in music or rock and roll or a musician or something, like, not everybody, but certain ones like that are kind of timeless, you know. They still jam.
Yeah.
And
Patti LaBelle.
Amazing.
Right?
Exactly. But he still has that voice, y'all. He's
Byron, if you don't mind, how long did he perform? Was he on there for an hour?
An hour and a half.
Wow.
Exactly. An hour and a half.
Did he have an opening act?
It was him, just him and his band.
Wow. God bless him.
No intermission.
I would have gone down there to see Smokey. They got some good shows in Atlantic City. I would have gone down there to see him.
For us, the old school crew, I mean, I'm into the new music, but, you know, there's nothing like someone singing a ballad and a love song or Tears of a Clown or just, I mean, the man is a
timeless.
It's a walking history lesson.
Of course.
Yes. Music.
Timeless. Yeah.
When they had
and I'm glad he's when kept. They... I'm glad he's kept healthy because you know I know he has a regimen. He at least when I interviewed him some years ago, he used to jog just like Melvin Van Peebles. You know, they were out there running.
Yeah.
You know, but it's deep. You know, but.
Yeah.
I have fallen in love with this lady who's basically portraying the life and times of Tina Turner on Broadway, Adrienne Warren.
She's
funny. I mean,
yeah.
Oh, please, ooh. That little girl. You know.
You saw it. You
I
saw
wish
the
I
show
could
one?
Go back and.
You saw the show?
No, a bunch of us are getting tickets. Some family, some cousins of mine are. We're going to try to do something hopefully before Thanksgiving, if we could, all the Gilmans could come out without fighting amongst themselves, you know, we'd like to go and see it. Because I'm in love with her, man. You know, I know she's old enough to be my daughter, but the girl could sing.
Granddaughter.
And she's cute, you know.
Where'd you see
the Tony Award? I have no shame now. I'm just old enough to say what I want to say. And I don't care. It's recorded, so what?
Where did
you
see her? Where did you see her?
I've seen her on TV. I had missed her at a meeting that they were having in Harlem a couple of weeks ago. And I had a conflict, and I had no idea that she was going to be there. And someone told me that, you know, after the meeting that she showed up. But, you know, I don't know where her head is. I just know she's talented. You know, if she says something that pisses me off politically, then all the love is gone. You know?
Yeah.
I don't care how you look.
I got a feeling you're not going to have to worry about that, though, brother. I got a feeling.
Yeah, I don't think I have anything, you know. Hey, listen, I wish I could turn the clock back, brother.
Wayne, she is very good. And I've seen on TV, she has that, what we call in the industry, Eric, that je ne sais quoi. When they get on stage, they just light it up. They own it. They just own it.
Yep.
And I used to go to Jones Beach to see Tina, but something's different about her, you know, the way she comes across.
I'm sure. Right. Well, let's go.
Yeah.
Get the people yourself there, Brother Wayne Gilman, legendary newsman.
Keep hope alive, brother. That's all I can say. I hope they get this debt thing done and, you know, everything else and the racism goes. Yeah.
There you go, brother. All right. We'll talk to you again on the next time, Brother Wayne Gilman, legendary newsman. Talk to you again.
Thank
brother
you.
Byron Saunders.
All right.
Yes, sir. Peace and love.
How about you?
Always remember. Washington, D.C. is about the power of the voice of the majority. Voice your power, people. Don't let the Republicans try to rule us. They're a minority, and they're a terrorist organization. That's all I got to say for today. See y'all next week.
All right, Brother Byron, so we'll talk to you again. Legendary historian. This has been K-Sun and Friends. I'm K-Sun. Eric, Citizen Payne, and we want to thank you for listening. Hope you'll be back listening. plus again, you know, I'm gonna do the music and do all the other stuff at the same time. We started with the Godfather. Let's leave with the Godfather. We're gonna have to pay the cost. Don't forget to vote.